This is a place where the infinite is possible. And you've just happened to find yourself here. This is not a coincidence. You have been called here to help yourself. If you pay close attention, you can empower yourself to be your own healer, to be your own person, to be your own source of happiness. And that's where it all begins. This is the BC Podcast. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome and thank you for tuning in. I'm so excited to bring you this podcast. I had so much fun speaking with Quatley. It was so good to hear his voice again. And I miss him. I miss him a lot. And he's a cheeky man, but he's full of wonderful, important information and knowledge and wisdom and grace and grounding and morals. And he articulates it all really, really well. And I feel very honored to be able to connect with him and bring him onto this platform for you all to, you know, soak up the knowledge that he's willing to share. And this podcast was mostly about peyote and what it can do for you in your life and the benefits it has and the lessons it can teach you. And we touched on, you know, connecting with nature and the universe and with ourselves as well, but it's mostly about peyote. So please enjoy and giggle along with me. Let's get into it. Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to the BC Podcast. My name is Beck. And today I have a very wonderful man by the name of Quatley. Hello, Quatley.
Hello, Beck.
How are you on this fine, sunny, by the looks of things, morning?
It's a beautiful Mother's Day morning here. The sun is shining all morning and I was out in the garden.
Oh, lovely.
Taking care of the plants, yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule for this.
Always happy to share whatever we can share with the listeners. Maybe they could find something in the conversation that can help them with something that they would like to know.
Yeah. I've met you a few times now in your travels, and you are an expert, I'd say, on the peyote medicine. And would you?
You know that I'd be classified as an expert in Australia because basically, in order to be an expert, you have to be out of town.
Right.
Okay, so I'm an expert in Australia.
I wanted to know about your beginnings with working with peyote and how you kind of found it.
I was about 19 or 20 years old, and I decided to go to Mexico to visit the place where my grandfather was born, which is a city called Matehuala, San Luis Potosí, is the state, San Luis Potosí. And this is very close to Real de Catorce, which is kind of the center of Wilicuta. And Wilicuta could be interpreted as like the sacred lands of the peyote, where the peyote grows. And during that travel, I met some friends, and this guy named Carlos, who had just come ceremony with the Huicholes, with the Wiradika people, showed up and wanted to know if we wanted to eat some of the peyote that they had given him instructions on how to share this peyote. And that was the first time I ate peyote, was with these guys in Mexico.
Wow. And then your passion grew immediately from there? Like, when did you want to learn more?
Yeah, it was, of course, anybody that's ever eaten peyote or, you know, done a ceremony with some plants, powerful plants, will attest to the fact that it's an unforgettable moment.
Yeah,
well, basically it was like this, and yeah, the experience had a profound, a very deep effect on my persona. And I left Mexico just like longing to partake of this ceremonies again. And I had to return to the States, and I started searching in the United States for people of the same culture, and I found out that there was a large group of Native people that partake of this sacrament, you could call it, in religious ceremonies, and under the umbrella of the Native American Church. And these ceremonies are celebrated in teepees, usually, or in the outdoors, or in different traditional lodgings, longhouses, hogans, pit houses, you know, things like this, and along with teepees, and sometimes in their living rooms too. And so I got connected with this vast network of indigenous people that are celebrating these peyote ceremonies pretty much on a regular basis.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
And then did you have to take a traineeship or anything like that, or you just kept hanging around them?
Well, there's several ways to associate yourself. If you become a member, usually people that come to the ceremonies are expected. If there's, you know, this is not, there's no, it's hard to call it a formal religion. It's more like a practice. And what you learn is to help out, you know, it's a cooperative society. So there are some preparations for each ceremony: chopping wood, putting up the teepee, clearing the land sometimes. And so, yeah, you're expected after a while to learn how to help in the preparation. And then as people become more confident with your participation, you begin to take roles in the actual ceremonies. Keep tending the fire, singing, hitting the drum, tying the drum and carrying the drum all night, assisting the newcomers, praying with the cedar, praying with the tobacco. All these are, I guess, more advanced forms of participating in these ceremonies. And I was pretty diligent in participating. I would sometimes go like twice a weekend, you know, every weekend. I actually moved to Arizona because in Arizona there's 21 Native reservations.
Mm.
Probably more like Oklahoma and Arizona are the states that have some of the largest numbers of what you call reservations, which are basically places where the U.S. government herded the Native people in, you know, to keep them captives. And they developed into like little communities. And in Arizona, there's 21 of these communities. And so I would travel around to these different communities on the weekends and participate in the and the peyote ceremonies and the sweat lodges and the dancing and the prayers and the other ceremonies, coming of age, Sundance, all of these different traditions that are still kept alive in these reservation communities.
So you've touched on a bit of those traditions, and I wanted to ask about the initiations into manhood and womanhood within your culture.
Yeah, some of them are very elaborate, very defined. Mm-hmm. Young women, when they come of age, there's an elaborate ceremony where the women are, they organize themselves into like stations, and the young girls go from one, well, they're young women now, I say the girls, the young women, they're in this transition period. They go from one station to the other, and they're kind of set up to the different directions. And in each direction, some of the elder women offer them guidance and advice on how to understand these transformations that they're going to into womanhood. And meanwhile, people are dancing all around with music and drums, and and then afterwards there's a big feast. And this is one form of initiation. Each people, each society, each nation has many times very distinctive rites of passage for both men and women. Young men are usually expected to go into sweat lodges for some days, and then in many cultures they go out into the forest or into a mountain and fast for 4 days alone. Wow. Some people call this vision quest. It's pretty common practice among most Native people, where the young men have to go into the different ways. Some of them, it's set up where they have a support system. In other cultures, they just venture out by themselves. Like I said, each people has a distinct way of conducting these ceremonies. But usually it entails that a young man would endure thirst and hunger so as to strengthen his spirit and get more connected to the elements, praying with tobacco and cedar, and this way ask for guidance from the spirit as to what his mission in life could be.
Mm. And would any of these initiations include peyote?
Yes, they could.
Yeah.
It depends on the particular community.
Mm-hmm.
Like in all of these ceremonies, peyote could or could not be used, because peyote is not accepted in some of the Christian, I guess you call them Christian natives, you know, a lot of, and then in some of the Christian natives, they do accept it.
Yeah.
It's, you'd have to make like a large scheme of communities and then check off what they do and do not do.
Right.
You know, it's like this. Yeah. It's very diverse.
Mm.
And the one that I participated, yes, they do encourage the youth to ingest peyote and pray with it, use it to help guide them.
Mm. And what has peyote taught you personally? Like, can you summarize some of the big lessons?
Well,
like big moments in your life.
It's very vast. I mean, the understanding, it's like the understanding that you can acquire by becoming familiar with plants is, it ranges from scientific to mystic to, almost incomprehensible. Because, I mean, when you think about the basic things that people, the questions they ask, you know, like who created the universe, you know, what's our purpose in life, what can we do with this modern society, how can we correct all of these things, how to become a better person, you know, how to understand natural phenomena, how to relate to each other, all of these things, you know, how to learn how to sing. I mean, it's just so, it's a vast array of information that basically peyote, if you have some questions about how to proceed in life, no matter what point you find yourself, when you encounter this medicine, it will assist you in clarifying. It brings a lot of clarity. And it also gives you physical endurance and physical strength to carry out these instructions that you may receive through the spirit, from the spirit realm. Because a lot of times these things are, they seem like they're physical challenges. And the peyote will help you in the physical realm also to be able to accomplish these goals that may be assigned to you, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I definitely felt like the ceremonies that I've sat in were my own initiations into different aspects of my life and myself, and very challenging physically the first time, and then the second was a breeze physically but more mental.
You know, like, for example, I can give you a very clear example.
Okay.
There's some people that come into ceremonies, they're addicted to substances.
Yep.
And it takes a strong willpower to be able to break these addictions. And I'm not only talking about substances, I'm talking about just addictions, you know, addictions to certain types of personalities, addictions to a lot of things that are on the internet, you know, video games, pornography. I mean, it doesn't have to just be, you know, chemical substances. But then, of course, there are a lot of chemical substances, starting with alcohol and the whole array of things that are available for people to use as crutches or as addictions, you know. And peyote has been proven to help individuals gain the willpower and the strength to transform their addictive personalities into personalities that are healthy and self-sustaining personalities, you know.
Yeah.
Some people are addicted to drama, man. Some people are addicted to emotional, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's all these things, and somehow peyote shows you. It's like a big mirror.
Yeah.
And it shows you, it's like a truth serum.
Yeah.
It's like looking into it. It's like looking into the mirror that says, mirror, mirror on the wall, you know.
Yeah, good ass kicking, right? I definitely found myself looking at myself, but it was like surprising to me. There's like no hallucinations. There might be like an occasional fluorescent green image that I might see, but it was like split second and then gone, and then back to just being reminded of things about myself and about what I'm doing. It communicates in a whole different way to other plant medicines.
It heightens your sensory perception. In other words, your vision becomes keen, your auditory becomes very keen, you know, your emotions, your intuition, all of this is honed, and everything becomes very crisp, very, very colorful. And lots of times people see this as hallucinating, you know, it could be like I'm hallucinating, but no, sometimes it's just the sharpness that you receive for your senses. And then again, there are things, visions, you could call them, that people receive if you're lucky.
Right. Okay.
You know, and if you eat a large quantity, and if this is your request, some people can't handle visions, you know. They start freaking out. So I always tell people, look, if you start seeing something that looks like you're, you know, not in this normal reality, just don't freak out.
Have you worked with many other plant medicines?
I think I've worked with most of them. There's a couple I know that I haven't, but as far as if you name a plant medicine, I probably worked with it at some point or another.
Okay. All right, cool. And do you like they add value in combination, or is there like a way that you would use them when you're, you know, so involved in peyote?
Yes. Especially in this day and age, you know, like maybe some years ago, people were very reluctant and very cautious to mix traditions and plants. But in 2019, people have had an opportunity to explore and become acquainted with so many different plants and the cultures, and it's almost becoming common practice now to combine the medicines, either in the same ritual or in a series of rituals. Like you could call it a medicine festival or a spiritual gathering, where one night, you know, you could partake of ayahuasca, the next night San Pedro, the night after that Santo Daime, and then the night after that, you know, you might have peyote, and then like this, you know. And then in some instances, you could, you know, partake of ayahuasca in the evening, and then maybe coming towards the morning, you could eat San Pedro or peyote. And then even during these events, you could also partake of tobacco, jape, or, you know, like pray with tobacco. Tobacco has its own power too. Some people underestimate it because of the common use of it in the form of cigarettes and leisure smoking. But tobacco is a very sacred plant. It can induce spiritual awareness when used properly. You know, and sometimes they combine Santa Maria, you know, marijuana, in a ritual sense. This is a common practice in the Santo Daime, the ayahuasca of Brazil, and also in the Amazon. And some of the people there combined it. And yeah, so then the list goes on. You know, there's a lot of other plants, and even, I guess you could say, other medicines, the kambo, the toad, the bufo toad. And when I was in Ibiza, I was stung by a jellyfish on my arm. And it was just right after a peyote ceremony, and I realized how much clarity and strength it gave to me that I was seriously considering getting a bucket of these jellyfish and start offering them as a...
Wow.
But no, I didn't do it. Didn't.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Animals can give us so much too, right?
They can, yeah.
When you say if used properly with tobacco, how does one use tobacco properly?
Well, first of all, tobacco, chocolate, a lot of things that were ceremonial plants, you know, the cacao plant was used particularly for Well, you asked me about tobacco, but I'm using cacao as an example.
That's fine too. It's beautiful.
Because it goes along the same vein. You know?
Yeah.
Take coca leaf. You know, all of these plants were used with definite purpose in mind, and this is to contemplate the universe, to bring human existence into harmony and balance with the rest of life here on Earth. So tobacco is basically used for, in a nutshell, you could call spirit communication. In other words, if you want to communicate your thoughts, your feelings, let's say you want to go hunt a buffalo or hunt a deer or harvest the corn or something, you use the tobacco to communicate your intentions, so that there's a clear message between the energetic existence, you know, like it's as simple as saying, okay, you're gonna go swim in this in the ocean or something. Sometimes people just jump in the ocean and the sea, they don't really stop to take a moment to say, you know, wow, you know, this is a vast spirit here, the ocean, you know. But most native people will take the time to take a pinch of tobacco or light a little smoke and just pray, just offer some gratitude and some appreciation to the ocean or to the river or to the waterfall or to the spring before drinking. This is a common practice, and tobacco is used to create this line of communication, much like cell phones are used today in the modern world. It's like a spiritual internet.
Ah, lovely. Huh. That's good. Hmm.
Even though nowadays people just use tobacco to make smoke, you know. I was wondering why they, you know, like I told these guys, I asked these guys, why do you smoke? You know, well, 'cause I like to make smoke. Okay, well, you know, I guess that's
I think that's where the vaping has taken off as well. the ones that aren't full of nicotine, the ones that just want to make smoke. You can make a lot of smoke with those.
Yeah.
What is your mission, and why are you doing what you're doing?
Well, I have quite a few missions, but in regard to the peyote, I think at some point after making various pilgrimages to the land of Wirikuta, once I realized that it's a proper thing to do to journey to this sacred place and leave offerings repeatedly year after year, after about 5 years, some of my elders, they said, well, if you have like something you'd like to request from the spirit of the peyote, you could make a request. And it occurred to me, like this idea came to my mind, that I would like to travel around the planet and help people to understand how this plant is beneficial, not only individually, but to humanity. You know, because peyote has a bad rap, you know, in some places, among some people, in certain circles in the government, and they think peyote is a drug that could harm you, that could make you go crazy, or, you know, something like this, when this has nothing to do with this. It's basically a plant that can heal many of the ailments that have been caused by this society. A lot of violence, a lot of that's perpetuated, you know, a lot of abuse, a lot of lack of respect for things in general, you know, for people, for the earth, for plants, for animals. It's gotten out of hand, you know. And peyote has a way of reorganizing your appreciation for life in general, and then in particular for other people, for everything, for the plants and the animals. So peyote has proven, just in my own personal experience, to heal many of the physical, the psychological, the emotional, and the spiritual ills of humans, wherever they find themselves. I mean, I've traveled to 33 different countries. And in those different countries, I must have gone to a total of like hundreds of cities. Like in Australia, I went to Byron, Melbourne, Perth, Sydney, and so like in each country I go to various cities, you know, and in each of these cities I'm always astounded by the number of people that send me feedback of the things that they were able to transform in their life, things that were bothering them, alcohol addiction, anxiety, depression, alcohol, all of these things. People write me back and they go, you know, they come to a ceremony a year later. I go to Australia like once a year and they come back to the ceremony and they offer these testimonies and the ceremonies of what they were able to transform in the year period since I had seen them last. And this is usually the case. Like I said, I've been to 33 different countries. I've been to Africa, to Asia, Muslims, Jewish, Christian, Native communities in Canada, all of Latin America. And no matter where you go, peyote is beneficial. So this, I guess you could say, is part of my mission. And then I guess you could complement this by the mission of helping people to learn how to conduct the actual prayer ceremonies themselves. Or at least to know how to use the peyote on an individual basis, whether it's microdosing or for like a ceremonial prayer, and to be able to utilize the peyote to heighten this healing and also to heighten their spiritual communication.
Can you talk a bit more about microdosing for us?
Yeah, microdosing, you know, maybe I should preface microdosing by maybe a little explanation. The limited information that I have about the molecules that compose the chemical makeup of peyote.
Sure.
And for example, 8 of these molecules are antibiotic, the strongest being peyotine, as they've labeled it. And these are natural antibiotics that work in amazing ways. For example, you could actually put some on a cut that's infected, some dry peyote, or squeeze the juice, and it will help promote the healing, fight the infection. And then there's other chemicals that some of these molecules that regulate the endocrine system of a human, starting with the pineal gland, the pituitary gland, going down the line, the thyroid, the thymus, all the way down, the adrenals, the gonads, and helps regulate the production of hormones, whether it's to curb the production of too much adrenaline, for example, or to increase the amount of serotonin or other hormones that are lacking. And these the endocrine system, the gland system, is directly connected to the chakras of a human. And the hormones are the physical element that help the energetic field, the chakras, to be in harmony and balance.
Mm.
So by microdosing, the peyote kind of works its way through your physical system, through your energetic system, and regulates the imbalances that have been caused by living in modern society. People are stressed out. People don't eat the right foods. People are thinking too much sex, for example, and this especially in youth, you know, they're bombarded with sexual, and this, the pineal gland, the meditation needs to be enhanced. So peyote is great for meditation, for stimulating these higher level chakras, the crown chakra, the third eye, you know, this. And I understand everything in forms of energy. This is one thing that peyote showed me. So to understand the human experience, you need to understand the energetic makeup of a human. And then you could see how microdosing or taking peyote in small quantities, let's say for a number of days. I would usually recommend 13 days, like a little half a teaspoon of peyote powder or a button or two, you know, in your smoothie in the morning. Mm-hmm. Best time to take it. Because it gives you so much energy. If you take it in the evening, you probably won't sleep. Unless you have something to do all night, and it's great. But usually I recommend people take a little bit of peyote in the morning. And, you know, there's people probably listening to this podcast that have peyote growing in their homes.
Yeah, I imagine.
I found out that people actually, the peyote is spreading around the world. And people actually have peyote, they don't know how to use it.
Mm.
So you could actually cut the top of the peyote button, because it's going to regenerate new buttons, and use that button, maybe eat a quarter of it each day for 4 days, for example, in the morning. And this is going to shift. It actually shifts certain things in your mentality and in your physical being. 4 days is a small amount, but you could, if you have enough to keep eating, like I said, a minimum of 13 days, you will see something change in your understanding. There was a young woman who was 24 years old in England. And the people in England will remember this. A lot of these things that I say, I don't really need to say the names, because people who were there can attest to these things. But
yeah.
She had been smoking marijuana every day of her life since she was 11 years old, according to her.
Wow.
And her brother had recently overdosed on heroin. And she came to a ceremony to kind of heal some of this grief that she was feeling. And after the ceremony, she says, you know, I think our family had, you know, some kind of addiction complex, because I've been smoking marijuana. I've tried to stop smoking marijuana, and I just can't. And I told her, you and I both know that marijuana, it's not a bad plant. But addiction could be detrimental to your own psyche, you know. To have to wake up and to have to smoke, you know, like you have no choice, you just have to smoke, you know, this is not good.
Mm.
I told her, okay, look, I'm going to gift you some powder and take it for 13 days and just see how it goes. So a year later in the ceremony, she goes, can I express myself? She goes, you know, I took this peyote that you gave me and I took a nice quantity, and I go, okay, I'm going to try not to smoke so much today. Well, it was the first day she hadn't smoked. She went through the whole day without smoking. And she woke up the next day feeling good, so she took another spoon. And then she went 2 days without smoking. So to make a long story short, she said she went 13 days, which was the longest period in her life that she ever went without smoking. And she says now she can smoke, but she's not addicted. It actually changed her whole perspective on marijuana. Like, she can smoke, but she's not addicted.
Wow.
And this was her testimony in the ceremony. For example, this is one case where microdosing was able to shift her, how could you say, her understanding of her own self. Because before, if you asked her, can you not smoke, she could say no. But then with the help of the peyote, the energy that the peyote gives you, this divine energy, if she was able to switch in her mind her understanding of her own self.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I'm already thinking of a few people I want to send
this podcast tour ready for that, you know, weed addiction. It's a thing, and like addiction in general, but
yeah.
A lot of people think you can't get addicted to weed or to any of these substances, but you can. How you mentioned spirit just before, and how does spirit and spirits come through, and how can they, you know, guide us to where we need to be? Like, how do we listen? How do we accept that that's information coming through for us?
Well, you know, the mind arranges energy into the perception that we have. And in the peyote experiences, you could receive messages from other dimensions that exist. And when they communicate, they usually analyze your mind to see what it is that's most receptive to your own personal how could you say it, interpretation of reality. For example, if you believe in the Bible and angels, for example, then an angel might appear to you, you know, and it might have a message for you, as happens in many times, like in biblical experiences. Angels appear to people, appear to the Virgin Mary, they appear to Moses, something like this, you know. So if you're in tune to this, you know, the angels of the four directions, and the angel, Michael, the archangel, and this, some people see angels. Okay, other people are more in tune to a natural experience. Maybe they didn't have this religious upbringing, so they see things in terms of hummingbirds and flowers and butterflies, and so then they might have an experience where, you know, a plant or an animal will contain a message for them. And then some people are more visual, some people are more audio, some people are more feeling, you know, more intuitive. So peyote is going to open up your capacity to receive messages, instruction from other realms. Some humans think that this is the only reality that exists, and you know, I'm not trying to convince people one way or the other, you know. But it is possible. There's a possibility that there are other forms of life in the universe. Intelligent,
yeah.
Forms of life.
Yeah.
Forms of life that want to communicate and assist humans on this planet.
Yeah.
Maybe they're from this planet. Maybe they're another form of existence, you know. They could be insects, you know. They could be... like maybe the bees realize that humans are killing them, killing the bees, which are very necessary for our own survival.
Yeah.
And maybe the bees are intelligent, you know, maybe they are intelligent. How do they make these honeycombs? How do they go around and gather all this pollen and make all this, you know, fertilize all, pollinate all the plants that we eat, you know? Maybe it's just might be possible that their intelligence could try to communicate something to somebody, you know, like stop polluting, you know, stop destroying, you know, appreciate the flowers, appreciate the other insects, you know, maybe the planet itself, the spirit of the planet could actually speak to someone. I had an experience where I felt or I thought I heard the Mother Earth talking to me.
Yeah, I've had a similar thing too. I've had a similar experience. Yeah.
Yeah, and what she was telling me was, you know, when you're traveling around the world, people ask you, where are you from, right? And you usually give them an answer, right? And I go, yeah. And well, from now on, tell them you're from the planet Earth. I go, they're going to think I'm a wisecracker, you know?
Yeah.
Well, you tell them anyway.
Hey, how can, like, our connection to nature is absolutely vital, but how can we develop a stronger one? Like, many of us live in concrete jungles, many of us have forgotten, and how, like, I know for myself, I have moved out of a block of units, apartments, I had to be around trees. So I rent a place that has all trees around me, but it's still not enough. I know, I went over east and I was out in, you know, the lush tropical Queensland, and I felt so recharged, but then coming back here, I'm like, it's just not enough. I need more. I'm losing my mind now. But how can we develop a stronger connection to nature?
I think it's a daily practice. Mm-hmm. I mean, myself, I drink a glass of water first thing in the morning. And everybody that knows me knows that this is what I preach. You know, if I preach anything, it's drink a glass of water in the morning. That's my religious advice for everyone. When you drink this water every morning, you do it consciously. You know, I mean, everybody knows we're made up of a large percentage of our physical being is water. But what they don't put in the dictionary is, like, water definition. You know, if the first definition of water would be spirit of life or something like this, you know. No, they put H2O, you know, a liquid made up of chemicals, you know, they depersonalize water. And once you start drinking water every day and looking in that glass of water and realizing that this water is alive, it has life, that's the reason we're alive. If it wasn't for water, we would not be alive. The water itself is alive. You know, it's not dead. It's not just a liquid. You know, it's a living being. The water on this planet. And of course, the planet is a living being. You know, even though I've had these discussions with some religious folks from other religions, and they go, no. I said, when I grab a handful of dirt, I go, this is alive. No, that's dirt. I go, you think it's dead? Yeah, it's dead. I said, no, when I grab a handful of dirt, I feel the life in that handful of dirt. It's a piece of my mother.
Mm.
So it's this simple, you know, it's an attitude of gratitude on a daily basis, starting with the first glass of water that you drink. Of course, then it could extend to the food that you consume. Every time you eat, you're eating something that comes from the earth. Usually it's a plant or an animal. And just the awareness that you can develop for everything that you consume. And the less processed it is, the more you will realize that it's a living being. An apple is a living being. It's a plant. It's alive. You know, if you eat a chicken, an egg or something, you know, this is a live being. Everything has life. It's transferring its life energy to your life energy. So when you get through with that apple, instead of just chucking it in a trash can, you know, if there's something left, go outside and put it back to the earth. You know? Even a piece of paper comes from a tree. You know, instead of just crumbling it up and throwing it in a waste paper basket, dig a little hole outside and put everything that's organic and can be decomposed, put it in a little hole and cover it up. Maybe put a little plant there. These little simple practices begin to create this awareness that has become dormant in the vast number of humans living in modern society.
Yeah, that...
When you live in a natural environment, this is so evident, it almost goes without needing to remind anyone of this fact. But when you live visiting the supermarket every day and buying things that have been canned and put in, you know, bags, and it kind of reduces your awareness. It actually reduces your awareness of what you're eating and what you're drinking, you know. Pop the cap off, you drink it, you don't think twice about it, you know. So if gratitude, when expressed on a consistent basis, will develop the awareness that our own personal existence is dependent upon nature. And this realization will create an appreciation for nature. And then nature will come to you. Once you open yourself to nature, nature will find its way into your life.
Yes.
You just have to open your heart a little more to nature.
That might have been the few steps that I'm missing, because, yeah, it's just like being outside hasn't been enough. Like, I need it like all over my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was I going to ask? I love the way in ceremonies how you make an offering of food to the animals and to nature itself. You make a plate. Can you talk a bit about that?
You know, this idea of making an offering, and sometimes we say we're asking for permission. You know, this word permission. And a lot of people have issues with this word permission. You know, like I tell people, yeah, we're going to ask for permission to eat this, or permission to drink that, or permission to go swimming, or permission, you know. And they're like, we don't need to ask for permission, you know. I go, well, maybe we can choose a different word. Okay, so what other word can you use for permission to eat, you know?
Giving thanks.
I don't know.
Giving thanks to eat, giving thanks to swim.
Yeah. Yeah. And some people, yeah, I think, okay, so permission, thanks, you know. I think if you become aware that we are dependent on nature, then it's only right, you know, to give thanks, to make an offering. Like, some people are so, I don't know what it is. Maybe they're so tight, or so, I don't want to say greedy or inconsiderate or unthoughtful, but they don't make offerings.
Mm.
You know? They can't even scrape a little bit of food off their plate to give it to Mother Earth, you know? They just want to eat the whole thing, you know? They won't even give them a French fry. Sometimes I tell the kids, put a French fry over there for Mother Earth. Why? We got to give a French fry, you know? Like, they're not taught. People are not taught to give a little bit back, you know? And what's happening is the spirit, because, and in my understanding, which I have developed this understanding, is that if the spirit isn't appeased, If you don't give back to the spirit in a conscious way, the spirit will take what it needs. You know, people are saying, why are there so many forest fires in California? I go, well, look at the way people in California live. How many people in California go into the forest and leave an offering saying thank you for anything? or the wood that they built their house out of, or the paper that they used to, for their money that they spend. How many people consciously go into the forest and say thank you?
So is that sort of spirit can be vengeful?
It can. It's not vengeful. It's balance.
Okay, yeah.
This is an important word in our in our cosmovision. It's called balance, equilibrium. Give and take. How do you say that? Reciprocal.
Yeah.
There's a word that sounds like reciprocity or something. I can never remember.
Reciprocating.
Reciprocating. Yeah, reciprocate. In other words, don't be take. And then take some more, you know, give. In a culture that honors giving, the one who gives the most is considered the richest. In a society where you accumulate and take, the person who has the most is considered the richest. It's a different way. See, in native culture, and I'll speak a little bit about our native roots.
Yes, please.
Here in this part of the world, we didn't have issues with attachment as other cultures do, because we didn't have the concept of ownership. Ownership fosters attachment. Non-ownership fosters generosity. And the more generous you are, the more you receive. This is energetic understanding of life. These are laws, you could say, if you want to call them that, of existence. That the more you give, the more you will receive.
And it's not to give just to receive more either.
Well, it works too. If you want to receive more, give more, you know.
Yeah, I definitely apply that a lot in my life, actually. Yeah. It's
I've proven it, yeah.
It's just like showing itself more and more and more. The more I'm like, I'll give you, especially when I give something that I truly love and value, that is hard for me to share. Especially when I do that, I definitely get more back.
For sure. Absolutely. And if you don't get it back, maybe you didn't need it anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually get something different back.
Yeah, people are very hung up on material goods, like too much, way too much. It's created a serious imbalance in the dealings that people have with other people. Like, I trade a lot. I trade feathers, I trade medicines, I trade, you know, whatever, you know. Whenever I make a trade, I always try to make sure the other person gets the better end of the deal.
Yeah.
And my friend who was with me, he was like, no, man, look, you're giving them, look how much you're giving them, look how what you're getting. I go, I know. He looked at me a little perplexed, you know, like, why are you giving them more than what you're receiving? I tell them, this ensures that I will have more things to trade later on.
Yeah. And you like, it makes you feel amazing, right?
I mean, some people feel good when they get the better end of the deal. I feel better when the other person gets the better end of the deal.
Yeah, yeah. When you give more, you...
And I try to teach my kids that. You know, I say, you have a candy bar, crack it in half. Give the big piece to your brother. Don't give them the little piece, you know.
How has it been like bringing kids into this wonderful wild world of yours?
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, the children, to see the accomplishment of children associated with the peyote culture is just astounding. Because whether you're a child or an adult, peyote helps you realize that in order to manifest the things you want in your life, it takes a certain kind of mentality, positivity, confidence, self-assuredness. It makes you dig into your creativity. It helps you to meditate and contemplate things, to make right choices. And if you make mistakes, because most people do, it teaches you to be gentle on yourself. As you are gentle on other people that make mistakes. So, like kids, it makes them more... I've seen it in my own kids, you know. And my daughter, especially, she grew up in the teepees. And it's funny because at school, they always ask the kids, where's your favorite place to be? You know, this is like a question at some point. And she would say, the teepee. Mm-hmm. And the teacher would say, what do you mean, the teepee? They didn't understand the response. You know? And what she meant as a child was that everything that you feel in the teepee, the love, the talk that's talked there, you know, the type of people that come there and all this, that's what she liked when she was a kid. She's lucky. She's a lucky child. She was born when there was a huge comet in the sky. Wow. When her mom became pregnant, there was a large comet that they call it, in English they call it Hale-Bopp. It's the largest comet that humans have witnessed up to this point in history. And when she was conceived, this huge comet appeared in the sky and was there for the period of 9 months of her gestation. And when she was born, shortly after the comet took off. And in our culture, to be born like this is to be lucky. Like lucky stars, you know, this idea of lucky stars. And she's very lucky. There was, for example, when she was in high school, you know how high school kids are real cliquish. So this new girl came to school from another town, and she's, you know, had a different accent, you know, looked a little different. Well, my daughter immediately, with most kids that came from other high schools, she would always be friendly to them. And eventually they'd be like best friends, you know, because the new kid has, you know, there's no friends at this school, so my daughter would become her best friend. Well, one of the kids that she became friends with was the smartest kid in class. You know, he was like the valedictorian, like straight A's. So usually when she was doing her homework projects, she had this super smart kid to do her projects with.
That's pretty lucky.
Yeah, pretty lucky, you know. She just happened to make friends with this guy. A girl that came, nobody really knew her, but her family is one of the wealthiest families in Texas. So the next thing you know, she's like, Dad, I'm going to go in my friend's private jet. We're going to go see the college team go play. Or we're going to go to Cabo San Lucas in Mexico for the weekend. I'm going with my friend.
That's pretty lucky.
She's lucky. Yeah, she got the Bill Gates Millennium Foundation grant. So she's completing her 4 years in pre-med. She wants to be a brain surgeon.
Wow.
But before she does that, she got accepted to NYU, New York University, with a $24,000 grant so that she can study on how to make medicine more accessible to people that don't have access to medical services. This is before she goes into medical school to become a brain surgeon. This is where she's thinking.
That's amazing. And to have the knowledge and to have all of your knowledge that you're imparting on her as well as all the medical stuff. That's amazing.
Well, you know, I don't want to sound too generalistic, but I think children that grow up in communities that pray with peyote develop good humanistic qualities. I'll just say like that. And a lot of them eat peyote when they're drinking breast milk.
Wow.
Or when the mom's pregnant. And this is very beneficial for a human being to have peyote during their prenatal existence or during their afterbirth when they're drinking their mother's milk. To have peyote in the mother's milk is a great advantage for any human being.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. And back to the comet, for me personally, I know that wherever the planets are, it completely affects my life. And can you share any knowledge that you have about the cosmos and us humans?
Well, first of all, the sun being the brightest heavenly body in our immediate sphere of existence was the subject of keen observation by all native people on this hemisphere. And they observed the way the sun apparently moved across the horizon. And this observation led them to understand the rotation of the Earth and the tilting of its axes. And then, of course, the moon is the second brightest object, which also became a subject of their devotion and study. And then the relationship between the sun, the earth, and the moon became of central importance to understand our existence in the solar system, which then expanded to the planets, which it's very easy to detect the planets if you just follow the ecliptic, which is exactly the same line where the sun, the moon follow. The planets go along the same line in the heavens. So it's not hard to follow them. And by observing them, they were able to map out knowledge which helped them to understand this concept of time. And they mapped it out in such a way that they could establish time, the sequence of the sun, the moon, the earth, Venus, Jupiter, Mars, all of these planets, and associate the position of these orbs, of these heavenly bodies, of these spirits, because each one has an electromagnetic energetic field, the influences that it has on the humans. Now, this is commonly known as astrology, but astrology also is one of these things that it sounds like some people don't really understand it. But it's as simple as knowing where the sun's going to rise every morning. That's how basic astrology is, and to know where the moon is and what phase the moon is in. Like if you ask somebody right now, I just ask anybody, what phase is the moon in? Like they might know the full moon, they might know the new moon, but the common person takes no care to understand where the moon is and what phase. More and more awareness is being created. I shouldn't say that. Maybe there are people listening and they're all answering, yeah, I know.
Well, I only knew because I looked up tonight. But, yeah.
Well, we could Google it right now.
Yeah.
Or you could look up in the sky tonight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, everything has a definite influence. So people started learning, okay, if we plant certain plants on a full moon, they do better, and other plants you plant on a new moon. You know?
Mm.
Well, the effect.
I was just going to say, well, with your daughter and the whole comet thing and to see how successful her life is, like I know there are certain planet combinations that can have an influence when someone's born to have a trajectory similar. Are there any other kind of really large phenomenons like the comet that can happen?
The alignment of the planets every 52 years, as marked in the native calendars, creates a line, their alignment, their energetic alignment. For example, there's a famous one in our culture. Every 52 years, Venus, the Earth, there are certain alignments with the planet. This is the beginning of a new cycle in our calendar every 52 years. There's certain calendars that are running simultaneously, 260 days, 13-day calendars, lunar calendars, Venus calendar, the calendar of the Earth and the Sun. Every 52 years, all of these calendars, they converge. In English, they call this the harmonic convergence. On one of these days, there was a young child born on the morning of this 52-year convergence. He was the first child born. So they called him Sreteopilitsin, the first child born. The first child born on the sunrise of the beginning of the 52-year day cycle. Now, as this child developed, it was noted that he had an uncanny way of understanding nature. Like he was able to communicate with nature. And this is what is looked for in individuals, their ability to communicate with nature. And as the story goes, he developed skills that allowed him to go into other dimensions.
Mm.
Now, the reason he was able to do this was because his spiritual existence, his energetic existence, and his material existence, his physical existence, was in perfect harmony and balance. And when someone attains this, in some cultures they call it Christ, in some cultures they call it Buddha, in our culture we call it Quetzalcoatl. So he attained what we would call the Quetzalcoatl existence, which means perfect harmony and balance between your energetic and your material existence. Kind of like how E equals MC squared, you know this.
Mm-hmm.
You're light, we are light, but yet we're physical. But most people only see the physical part. In ancient cultures, we could see the light, and some people can see your light. He was able to shift between light and material. And in this realm, he was able to go into other realms. For example, he brought back corn for the native people of this continent. So they changed his name. When he was born, he wasn't called Quetzalcoatl. But they knew that he had an auspicious birth because of the alignment of the planets.
Mm.
So when he became a young man, they named him Quetzalcoatl. They changed his name, or they added it to his name. His name was Sreteopilitsin Quetzalcoatl. Now they added that, like you add PhD to somebody's name or something like this, you know.
Wow.
And he was able to instruct the civilizations on how to construct using molecular level construction. Like how to take a stone that weighs 40 tons, shape it, and then put it next to another one that weighs 20 or 30 tons so that you can't even fit a human hair between these stones. Why? Because universal knowledge comes from the ability to transcend your own reality, and then you can acquire other information.
Yeah, I've had recently actually some kind of messages coming in because I was like, what is going on with my world and my life? And they've said to me that you're like absorbing right now all the ancient wisdom that's around you and from everyone else's ancestors that are around you. And that is very interesting, which you've just reminded me of.
Have you ever heard of Marie Curie?
No, I don't think so.
Her and her husband were using radiation. They were a French couple, or I think they were, yeah, French. Anyway, the reason I mentioned her is because they spent their whole life looking for a certain formula. And she received it in a dream.
Wow.
And when she woke up, she tested the formula and it proved to be the correct formula. Now, some people call this subconscious. There's a lot of labels right now used to describe the reality of humans. And a lot of them are limiting. For example, have you ever heard this phrase called human nature?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a very incorrect concept.
Okay.
Because it says humans are naturally aggressive. Humans are naturally greedy. Humans are naturally selfish. Humans are naturally this and that. I tell them, I shouldn't use some words, but anyway, I'll almost slip. I'll just say, but these kind of ideas, I think, are limiting.
Definitely.
You know? And we don't need limits right now. We need to expand our consciousness. Well, we need limits on how much material stuff we get, but where it comes to the mind, we need to expand.
Mm.
We don't need things that limit. See, before they would say, look, there's heaven, there's hell, and that's all there is, okay? The world is flat, don't go to the edge, okay? You're going to fall off. Now, people's minds need to expand. You have to imagine a lot of things can be possible, especially when it comes to human existence. I won't even call it nature because it's like incorrect, these ideas they put forth.
Mm.
People are taught to believe. And these plants crack that mold.
Mm.
They crack it wide open. And a lot of people are fearful of this. Because these plants, the chemicals they contain, they open the mind. They open the heart.
And after taking them, it's like they've unlocked that part of the brain so you can go in and use it again without having to take them.
Yeah.
Mm.
Exactly. You know, they connect, they start connecting you to other areas of existence that before, because you were taught not to go there. You simply didn't.
Do you read your dreams? Like, I find I've kind of given them labels, like what you're saying about Marie. I have truth dreams, which give me information about what's happening, and then I have the stock standard, like sorting out your week, your month, and then there's like future dreams and all different types. Do you read your dreams like that?
Yeah, it's all under the, I guess I'm trying to use terms that people are familiar with, like mental telepathy.
Yeah, okay.
You know this term, mental telepathy? Yeah, where people are communicating at another level besides the way we're communicating now.
Mm.
And this type of communication occurs when you're awake and when you're sleeping, when you're dreaming. And it sometimes it can be very important messages that are being communicated through this mental telepathy. And it's already been proven many times that there's more than one level of consciousness. For example, there's the mind, there's the heart, there's the gut.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of these is an intelligence in its own right. It stores information, it analyzes information. And if you learn to listen, just like you listen to your mind, to your heart, and to your gut, you will have better instruction on how to proceed in your life.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, sometimes when you're sleeping, you have relax the mind to the point that other messages can come through.
Yeah, look like the shower.
Yeah.
Look like when you're in the shower, right? Have all those epiphanies in there. I also wanted to talk to you a little bit about masculinity and femininity, and how to like embrace the two within the one human being, and how to be a man and how to understand men and women and the role that we play with each other and the balance again.
Well, as long as the men tell the women they're always right, there'll be perfect harmony and balance.
Oh, yeah, that sounds right.
That's about right. Like we say, as long as the men have the last word, everything will flow right. And what's the last word? Yes, darling. No, there is quite a bit of harm that's been caused through male-dominant society. And most of these male-dominant societies have created such an imbalance that it creates an imbalance in the whole society of humanity. You know, most civilizations that have reached high levels of intelligence, scientific, like take for example the Egyptian statues. When I was in Egypt, the first thing I noted was that the male and the female statues were of equal stature and equal symmetry. They were the same, basically, the male and the female. And this is also common in Native American art, where the symbols of male and female are equal. Kind of like the Sri Yantra, where one triangle represents the male and the other one represents the female, and they're perfect in dimension. The yin and the yang, these are perfectly balanced. Like the black is bigger than the white, or the dot in the black is bigger than the dot in the white. No. See, this is basically male and female. So they have to be in perfect harmony and balance. And anytime they're not in any society, it's going to create a disruption in the flow of the society.
And so how do you apply that within yourself, seeing as we all have masculine and feminine? How do we not allow one to take over more?
Well, I mean, there's certain attributes that in human femininity and in human masculinity that are distinct. And this needs to be remarked also. In other words, men do not have children.
Mm-hmm.
And so the differences need to be honored and respected, not belittled or discriminated. So the individual aspects that distinguish the male and the female need to be looked at as something magnificent and something glorious, not something to be abused or belittled. If women are more emotional and they're more attached to the moon and it affects them, this needs to be honored, not ridiculed. You know, if men are more attached to the sun and they feel like, you know, this needs to be honored also, you know, like. So yeah, then as long as there's an understanding of the differences and the equalities, and everything is put into perspective, the society will form around that. For example, in our culture, there were all native cultures in this continent were matriarchal, and the primary creator spirit is viewed as feminine. Not masculine. Because you ask the simple question, where did you come from? And the answer is, you came from your mother. So they say, well, where did the universe come from? Well, from the mother of the universe. So this is, you know, where did God come from? From his mother. You know.
Well, with yourself, I can definitely feel, you know, your feminine qualities as well as your masculine qualities. And how do you navigate the feminine within yourself?
Well, it's the qualities of, I think, if you see a mom, you know, they're very caring, you know. Mothers naturally are very caring. And the mothers are on point 24/7, you know. They don't, like, if they have a child, it's not like, you know, I'm going to put my kid outside for a couple hours and I'm going to go to the store. No, they have, you know. Mothers have to be on point all the time. And when I'm in a ceremony, for example, if I'm leading a ceremony, I don't take the luxury of just going into my own space. You know, like I say, okay, look, I'm leading the ceremony. I have to be here present for every, how many people are in the ceremony? 60 people? Okay, I need to be available for all 60 people for the duration of this ceremony. And I think this is a quality that comes from observing women and how they can be multitasking. I think women invented the term multitask. You know? I don't think men had developed this quite as well as women had multitasking, you know.
Well, I've seen you in action, and you're really quick. You're very quick and hilarious.
Well, yeah, I think men tend to be a little more rigid, and I guess you could say comparing a man's light to a flashlight as like a straight line light, as women are more like a light bulb.
Okay.
Where they can see a lot of things happening all at once. And I think it's the combination of these two. You know, I think it's, like I said, it's not like going overboard on one or the other. To be able to focus and yet have a wide perspective.
Now, I personally Sorry, you go.
No, I was just going to say, like, when you're in a ceremony, you know, you're looking at the whole picture, but if you see one person needs some special attention, you know, there's always one kid that wants more attention than the other ones. Could you come wave your feathers on me or something?
Yeah, I think that was me my first time. I definitely, like, a peyote ceremony really makes me aware of my masculine aspects, because it feels very like, yeah, I'm with the boys, I'm sitting up straight, I'm taking it, I'm doing well. And then it can also, like, come from the feminine strength as well, which is a whole different thing. So I have two, the both are very much present with each other. But I'm definitely more masculine, like, because of my life situation. I'm trying to balance it out.
I mean, everyone, like, I hear your explanation, and I think everyone attributes certain characteristics to either masculine or feminine, which I think at some point there's some crossover, you know. Like, sometimes, you know, you tell the little boy, you know, be strong like a man, and then they say, well, why don't you tell the girl to be strong like a girl? Okay, well, be strong like a woman. Don't say girl, say woman. Okay, well, be strong like a woman.
You know? Yeah.
So there's some things that I'm sure are applicable to both energies, masculine and feminine. And then I say, it's like, but then again, there's some that are very peculiar to either or other, you know. And I think this is where, in the analyzation of, there has to be a balance, you know? Like, in our, you know, like, in our culture, they say the women are closer to the earth, so they would only have the women put the seeds in the ground, for example. But then you never know if this was just a ploy by the men to say, so that the women would be the one to plant.
You know? Yeah, true. I know that you don't really call yourself a shaman. What do you call yourself? Do you call yourself anything?
Well, let me say something about this word shaman, you know, because I traveled to Russia last year. I was invited to the Festival of Shamans, and I received an official certification signed by the shamans of Tuva, close to Mongolia. So I am actually a certified shaman.
Okay.
I have a certificate on my wall if you want to see it. So if anybody doubts that I'm a shaman, I can show them my certificate.
Okay.
And they also gave me a particular medallion that's only worn by shamans. But I think that, you know, what I try to avoid, Beck, to be honest with you, is, see, some people feel there needs to be a separation between the person conducting the ceremony and the participants. Like, they want to put the person sitting, you know, behind that peyote button in another category. Like, he is the medicine man, or he or she is the leader of this ritual, which, okay, there's a responsibility involved. But I think in the long run, it could be detrimental to the functioning of these ceremonies. I think everybody needs to be looked at as their own personal shaman or medicine person. Otherwise, they create a dependency or a reliance on the actions or the words of the person leading the ceremony. And this is what I'm trying to avoid. And this is the main reason I don't like these labels.
Mm-hmm.
Then people come in, they eat the peyote, and they start looking, okay, so what are you going to do? How are you going to help me? You know? I'm like, look, I'm just going to sing like everybody else in here. You need to do your own work.
Yeah.
So yeah. You might as well just start.
Yeah, I love that. And, I know you have to leave soon. We need to wrap this up for you. But is there anything going on that you want to let people know about, that whether it be something you're doing or something any of your friends or loved ones are doing?
Well, there's so much going on. There's a lot of ceremonies happening all over the planet. You know, there's... myself, I've showed about 25 different people how to conduct ceremonies.
Beautiful.
And some of them are young men, young women. And I would ask the listeners to support them. I mean, it's okay to be critical, you know, I mean, in a good vein. You know, we're learning. But overall, be supportive to these individuals who have taken responsibility to conduct ceremonies and help them.
Mm.
You know, volunteer, you know, go out there and make their responsibilities a little lighter by assuming some of these responsibilities. Maybe offer to be a helper in the ceremonies. You know, if you already know the medicines, instead of going into a ceremony where the person is new and saying, let me see how many things I can pick on this person that does, he's not doing right. Maybe just go and say, hey, look, I'm familiar with these medicines. If you need some help, I'm here to help, you know. But just don't get in the way either.
Yeah.
Like this, you know, so like, and then there's a lot of new medicines. I would say, always be cautious. In the same sentence, I'm going to say, be cautious if you do go to ceremonies that are being conducted by people that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Caution. Don't throw caution to the wind because you might need it. Be aware. You know, people ask me, what do you call yourself? A shaman? A medicine man? Basically, I say, I am aware. This is my label.
Yeah.
I'm aware. And I'm also flexible. Because I know things are transforming constantly. Things are always changing. So even if you come to one ceremony of mine and you didn't like it, come to the next one. It might be different, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I can vouch for that. They were both very different. Cool. And I'll attach your website and how to get in contact with you and how to support you in the notes, quatley.com.
You know, another important thing, Beck, since we're talking about peyote, and this is like the central theme, even though I know we went to very many different topics. But peyote is an endangered species.
Oh, yes.
That's plant.
Yes.
And the reason it's endangered is not because more people are eating peyote. I want to clarify this. Because the more you eat peyote, the more it reproduces. But it needs a place to grow. And its natural habitat is threatened. Just like the natural habitat of many plants and animals is being threatened. You know, plants and animals in the ocean are threatened, not because of any other reason than the ocean itself is threatened. And the same applies to peyote. The land where it grows is being destroyed through mining, through incorrect agricultural use. So I'm going to put a shout out there to anyone that can support efforts to create safe havens for all plants and animals that are endangered, including peyote.
That's beautiful, yeah. We really needed to say that, so thank you for doing that, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't hear what you said.
I just said thank you for doing that. We really needed to say that. I didn't even think to mention that, actually. So thank you.
Yeah. Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And, and then the other thing I would say is I travel around the world a lot through this hemisphere, and the native people of this hemisphere are being threatened by governments. Like, for example, the Brazilian president right now compared the people living in the Amazon to animals living in a zoo. This is their mentality. You know, President Trump, you know, he has no respect for the native people's rights as indigenous people. As so many presidents and governments and laws, they disrespect the culture and the way of life of native people. And there are changes being made. There are some presidents, you know, Evo Morales, you know, even the Canadian president is trying to make changes.
Yeah, and you can see plant medicines getting in there too. Like Denver just, you know, made psilocybin, you know, decriminalized. So that's a win. Yeah.
So these are good. I want to applaud these places. You know, San Francisco banned plastic bags and plastic bottles.
Yeah.
And what does this have to do with peyote is that these are the kind of actions that create awareness.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's all about. We need people to create more awareness of what's happening to themselves. As far as choices go, I want to leave you with this.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to make proper choices. Don't hurt yourself, don't hurt others, and don't hurt nature. You want to do something good? Do something that's going to help yourself, help others, and help nature.
Mm. Thank you, sir.
All right, babe. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye. Please forgive me if I missed a few things or didn't make a great deal of sense. It was 1 a.m. for me, and I'd had a big day, but I did my best. If you guys are digging what I'm doing here with the podcast, please head over to iTunes, give it a rate and review, and hit that subscribe button for me. The intro music is done by Tran Exister, and I'll put a link to the Bandcamp website in the show notes. And the birds were captured by Glenn from 4D Empty, and I'll pop a link to where you can get in touch with him as well. All right, lots of love. Bye.